Okay, let's start. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Scottsdale Big Book Study, where we will study the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Today's date is Saturday, and it's the 23rd of March. My name is Johan, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater from Sweden. And I will be your host for today's study. Our co-hosts are Audrey and Sue L. Thank you so much for service. If you have any questions during the meeting, please contact either myself or any of the co-hosts by private message in the chat function. The chat function will be disabled until 5 minutes before the questions and answers session. Please note that the speaker, Harlan G., will be recorded for the duration of the study. However, the question and answer session, which follows, will not be recorded. We ask if you can please make sure to keep your microphone on mute at all times during today's study and also turn off your video if you are exercising, eating, or if you need to step away from your screen for any reason. During the meeting, we will post a link to our seven tradition. This money goes towards the cost of our Zoom account, the cost of uploading our recordings, and we also send contributions to our intergroup and WSO. We will post a link to the previous week's recordings. These are available by clicking on the link that will be posted in the chat box. And now, without further ado, is that how you say it? Hi, ladies and gents, this is the man, the concept, the myth again. Mr. Harlan G., take it away.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Thank you for coming. First thing I want to say, and I'll let you guys eat your hearts out. It's going to be about 80 here today, sunny, absolutely stunning. This is why we live here. I hope that you're going to have as beautiful a day, whether you're listening on podcast or on Podbean or YouTube, or you're here today. I hope it's as absolutely stunning where you are as it is here in Scottsdale, Arizona today. We have been in Bill's story, and today we're going to finish Bill's story. But as we look back on Bill's story, how vital it is that we study this incredible chapter. Originally, this was not meant to be in the front of the big book. This was meant to head up the story section in the back of the book. And the story section in the back of the book was inspired by a book called The Varieties of Religious Experience by William James. And The Varieties of Religious Experience by William James was a book that was written by a psychologist for psychologists at the very, very beginning of the 20th century. And what the stories describe is what you were like, what happened to you, and what you're like now. In other words, you were like a certain way. Maybe it was addiction. Maybe it was just a bad situation of life, something unfortunate. And then God came into the picture. God came into that picture. And as a result of God coming into the picture, you were transformed. And this is the basis of our leads that we do today. When you do a lead, you're taught what you were like. I ate, I did this, I did that, I drank, I drugged, I this, I that, whatever that may be. I was Al-Anonic, I was codependent, whatever that may be. What happened? You hit a bottom, and then you found God and what you're like now. And so we study this chapter, and it was moved to the front of the book as chapter two originally. Now, remember that in the first edition of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the doctor's opinion was chapter one. Chapter one was the doctor's opinion. And then what happened is they moved the doctor's opinion from the Arabic numeral section into the Roman numeral section, and they relabeled Bill's story as chapter one. Now, why did they do that? Well, the prevailing theory is that Dr. Silkworth was not an alcoholic. That we know. That's not a theory. That we know he was not. But the book is supposed to be written by alcoholics for alcoholics. And so the integrity of the book being written for alcoholics by alcoholics was not intact with Silkworth's chapter being chapter one. I'm lucky enough to have a first edition, first printing of the big book. And I have this book as a gift from somebody that to this day, I still don't know who they are. They remained anonymous. I got this in the mail, and no matter what I did, there's a guy in Alabama, he will not tell me who sent me the book. He still to this day will not tell me who sent me the book. But anyway, I have it and it's in pristine condition. But in my book, first edition, first printing, the doctor's opinion is definitely chapter one. Now, we study Bill's story because it's step one and the history of step two. The history of step two is in here because we see on pages eight, the bottom, 9, 10, 11, 12, we see Bill accepting this spiritual remedy to his alcoholic dilemma. And then on page 13, Bill in the town's hospital in December of 1934 will work the steps, and he is never going to drink liquor again throughout all the days of his life. And he will work the steps quickly rather than slowly. He will work them quickly as an example to us to work through these steps as quickly as is humanly possible. And so he serves as an example of that, as are other examples as well. There are other examples as well of people working through very quickly so that they can sponsor. And the key is to get into that idea that you must sponsor, because if you don't, you will not recover. It's not going to happen. You must pass what you know. And we're going to see that in the paragraph that we left, one of the ones we left off on last weekend, where we read at the bottom of 14, my friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles. What are the principles? The principles are the steps. Now, when we get started, we're going to start on 15, but I just want to bring this paragraph back into the spotlight. In all my affairs, particularly was it imperative. What does imperative mean? It means important above all else. Important above all else. Was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me? In other words, sponsorship. To pass on how you work the steps to another person. What you're intending to do is put the hand of God in the hand of your sponsee. And the most efficient way to do that is to work them through the steps. Now it goes on to say, faith without works was dead, he said. And my very, very dear person in my life once said to me, works without faith is dead too. I have to have faith. I can't just, you know, I have to have faith without works is dead. Works without faith is dead too. He said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. Now listen to this next sentence on the bottom of 14. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life, now they're going to tell you how to do that. He says, goes on to say, through work and self-sacrifice for others. Work and self-sacrifice for others means sponsorship. He could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. Now, what does that mean? That means that no matter how evolved my recovery gets, I will never rise above the level of a human being. And certainly, I'm going to have trials and I'm going to have low spots ahead. And you know, my life illustrates that. You know, I have a good life. I have a life that's worth living. I have a life that includes owning my home and owning my car, and my bills are paid. And I absolutely am crazy about somebody that I'm seeing, that I'm dating, and hopefully they're equally as in love as I am. And I have friends and I have people in my life, and I have my little business, and you know, my life works, and I walk, and I have friends and things like that. My life works. My life is a good life. And I didn't always see it that way. Trust me when I tell you that. I did not always see that my life was a good life. I always had something to complain about. Now I try to count my blessings rather than count where life sucks. So my whole attitude has been changed. And then it goes on to say here, if he did not work, he would surely drink again. If he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. If I go back into the food, everything that I just told you will disappear. My business, my love life, my life, my friends, everything will be pulled down and destroyed by my disease. How do I know that? Because that has been the case my entire life. My entire life. My life illustrates that. So today I'm going to work my program. And he says, faith would be dead indeed with us. It is just like that. I have to have that faith in God. Without that faith in God, I got nothing. I believe in the core of my heart, in the core of my soul, I believe that God is here and that all is well, even though it may not appear that way in the moment, because there's ups, there's downs. And you know what I happen to know? No matter what happens, it's all temporary. The only permanent thing is God. The only permanent thing is recovery. And when I work my program, no matter what is going on around me, I can put a smile on my face and be glad that I'm alive. Very, very important. So we see Bill's story, and we see how in the first 8 pages, it illustrates his plunge into the nadir of his alcoholism, and how in each paragraph, on each page, his disease gets worse and worse and worse. So his story illustrates beautifully the progressive nature of the disease. Well, in the paragraph that we're going to begin with today, we're going to see the progressive nature graphically of his recovery. We're going to start on page 15. We commence to make many fast friends. But before we get to page 15, where it says we commence to make many fast friends, I also want to remind you that as we read through Bill's story, because the purpose of putting it in the front of the book was to get you to identify in if indeed you are alcoholic. So if you are an alcoholic, you are going to ask yourself this question. Do I think, or you're a compulsive overeater or whatever you are addicted to, do I think like Bill thinks? For me, yes. I've never been drunk on alcohol in my entire life. Alcohol does not call me. It does not, it is not something I have to think about not doing. I've never had the thought of drinking liquor in my life. It's just not, it'd be the same as asking me, how many times have you thought about drinking hippopotamus urine? And the answer is never. I don't think about liquor. It's just nothing. But I can relate to Bill Wilson right down the line. Do I think like Bill thinks? Do I eat like Bill drinks? In other words, more and more and more and more and more as time goes on. I couldn't get drunk and I couldn't get sober on the food. When I was a little boy, a Milky Way bar would get me high as a kite. And it would do the job. It would give me that buzz. It would give me that, my whole brain was lit up by one Milky Way bar, but it triggered the allergy. As time went on, it would be one Milky Way bar, then two, then seven, then 12, then Doritos, then pizza, then McDonald's, you name it. It just it, and I still wasn't there. And when I say I wasn't there, if you're a compulsive overeater, you know what I'm talking about. You got to get there. In other words, am I flying high from the food? Do I get that effect? And the only thing about that effect that is so bad is it only lasts about 9 seconds. But the food just couldn't get me there until I ate massive, massive quantities of it. And the more I ate, the more I had to eat. And the more I had to eat, the worse my life got, and the fatter and fatter and fatter and more distant from my dreams, my goals, my aspirations were. So this was the nature of my disease. This was how the disease manifested itself in my life as a progressive disease. What would work for me when I was 5, 4, 10 no longer was working for me when I was 20, 25, and 30. So I had to eat more and more and more and more. And as the diarrhea got worse, as the pissing in my pants got worse, as the obesity got worse, my life spun completely out of control at a rate that I could only imagine. And so I remind myself from time to time, and how do I do that? By sponsoring other people, that if I don't work my program, there is a bottom that is well beneath the bottom that I once thought was the worst possible bottom possible. Remember that the disease only gets worse. It never stays the same. And it never does, it never pauses. So you could say, well, I'm going out of town, or I'm going to here, I'm going there, I'm doing this. So I'm not going to call my sponsor, or I'm not going to have my sponsees call me. The disease laughs at that, because no matter what the situation is, no matter what the situation is, the disease does not take days off. The disease is relentless, unmerciful, murderous, and absolutely a terrorist. And it will continue to get worse and worse and worse. Now, the recovery, when we hold God's hand, the recovery will continue to get better and better and better and better. My life gets better. My life gets better every day. Now, I will tell you that again, my life today, I wish I had another $1 million so I could retire. I wish I had a flying carpet so I could do whatever. I wish I had, a genie in a bottle. Did you ever hear the famous joke about the genie in the bottle? Guy rubs the genie in the bottle, and the genie pops out and says, "I've got one wish for you." And the guy says to the genie, "Well, could you make peace in the Middle East?" And the genie says, "Well, let me see a map of the Middle East." and the genie, he just you can't make heads or tails of it. And he says to the guy, "Hey, do you have something else that you'd like?" And the guy says, "Well, could you make the Cubs win the World Series?" And the genie says, "Well, maybe we should have another look at that map of the Middle East." So anyway, the bottom line is that we have a life that continues to get better and better and better and better when we hold God's hand. And yes, there's going to be low spots and trials ahead, but we have to keep confident that God is going to do for us what we cannot do for ourselves. Very, very important to keep that in mind. Very important. So on page 13 and 14, Bill works the steps. Now, Bill is a selfish son of a bitch. He's an alcoholic. He's never given two thoughts to anybody else in his life other than maybe women, and we won't get into that distraction, or people that could facilitate him making money, or that, drank with him so he didn't feel like he was alone. But at the bottom of 14, he also has this epiphany that other people may need help. And so he sets out to help them. Now let's go to page 15. We commence to make many fast friends, and this is where we're going to start today. And then we're going to start the chapter, There Is a Solution. Okay. We commence to make many fast friends, and a fellowship has grown up among us, of which it is a wonderful thing to feel a part. This is the greatest joy a person can feel, is to be a part, the camaraderie, the instant friendship, the kinship of this program. You look around at any convention, and we're having a big book retreat here in Phoenix in July, July 12th, 13th, and 14th. And we're really hoping you're going to come. It's going to be at the Crowne Plaza Hotel, in Phoenix. It's right by the airport, Sky Harbor Airport in Phoenix. It's going to be really good. We're going to have a good time. And we have the OA birthday, and hopefully next year we're going to have the Vision Convention. What a treat to walk out into that lobby or into one of the meeting rooms and feel that instant connection with people who I only sometimes know because I see them once every year or once every few years, but I know them like I know my best friends. They are my best friends. I love my friends from high school. I love my friends from grammar school. Truly, I do. Truly, I do. But truthfully, you guys understand me in a way that they never could. I'm not selling them short. I love them. I would die for them. But you understand me in a way that they cannot. Why is that? Because you speak and understand the language of the heart. You know what it's like to be me. I know what it's like to be you. We may have nothing in common, but we have everything in common. And only people that have traveled these roads really understand that this is so vital to my life, so vital to my life. And that's my truth. The joy of living we really have. The joy of living we really have, even under pressure and difficulty. I have seen hundreds of families set their feet in the path that really goes somewhere, have seen the most impossible domestic situations righted, feuds and bitterness of all sorts wiped out. Now, I'm going to address the first part where it says, in the path that really goes somewhere. I have many friends. I've been blessed. And many of my friends are retired. And do you know what they say to me all the time? I don't have anything to do. I'm bored out of my skull. I wish I had something to do. I wake up in the morning, if I'm lucky, and I never have to wonder what my purpose is under heaven. I never have to think about What is it that I am supposed to do with the one day I have today? I have a purpose and a rhythm, and I know what is my job and what is not. And I know that there are people out there that do not have this, and I feel bad because I have never in my life been as certain of what I am supposed to do in any given day, week, month, year, or lifetime. My job today is to do everything I can to help the still suffering compulsive overeater. And if I've done that, I have done everything I can do to serve God. Because what does it say on page 77? It says our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. All through this book, we are told that this is an altruistic movement. What does altruism mean? What is altruism? Altruism is giving with no thought of return. Now, in my former life, I knew how to give as a manipulation tactic. I knew how to give so that I could get. I knew how to give you a quarter so I could get $10. That I knew how to do. What I didn't know how to do in my disease, that I do naturally in my recovery, is give because of giving, because giving is the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do is to be there for somebody that you love, to be there for the person who is mourning. Yesterday, I had an opportunity to speak to a woman I've known since I lived here in Arizona. I've known her for 21 years, I think. I moved here in 2002, so it's 22 years in June, 21 years. She lost another one of her sons. And I was able to call her and leave her a message telling her how absolutely sorry I am that another one of her children has passed away before her. That's the right thing to do. And I'm willing to do whatever I can do. But I'm not looking for the return because the return comes from God. So Bill Wilson is discovering you don't always have to go tit for tat. You don't have to go and give as a manipulation tactic. And he says, I've seen men come out of asylums and resume a vital place in the lives of their families and communities. Could that occur through any other method than God? Is that something short of a miracle? You know what my cardiologist told me a number of years ago? He told me something that I will probably never, ever, ever forget. He's a good guy. I like him. He's a really good guy. And I see him every 6 months, but I think about him more than that. He's a good guy. He said to me, the mathematical chances of someone doing what you did are zero. It just does not happen. And for the length of time is statistically not measurable. There are no other instances of somebody losing 500 pounds and keeping it off for decades in the annals of history. It just does not happen. He said to me, by all reckoning, you should have been dead years ago. Now, recently, I had a stress test on my heart, and I got measured and photographed. You know how they do your stress test with you're all hooked up to these wires, and they take. Do you know what they told me after everything I've done to myself? the flow of blood in and out of the heart is normal. I have some blockage, but I have a normal blood flow in and out of the heart. That doesn't happen to people that ate Reese's peanut butter cups in the amounts that I ate them. It doesn't happen to people that for years and years and years ate 10, 20 Egg McMuffins a day. It just doesn't happen. And yet, it happened to me. And if it can happen to me, it can happen to you. It can happen to you. The miracles that we're describing are not unique unto me or any one of us or any five of us or 20 of us. There is no hierarchy here. There is no elite here. There is no privileged here. We are all privileged based on the work we do. That's what it's based on. How much are you willing to do? And the more you are willing to do, you never ever fall short of this. When you walk to God, He will run to you. Walk to God means you're working the steps. Walking to God means at some point you start sponsoring other people. Walking to God means you take the action that is consistent with your recovery. And if you'll do that, you will have everything I had and everything Bill is describing, because the age of miracles is alive, and the power of God is alive, and the power of God is real. And the power of God will be unleashed in your favor if you will just take these actions. Don't ever doubt God. When you need Him, He will be there, even though it may not seem like it at the time. I pray all the time. I count my blessings all the time. Why? Because it's the only thing I have that separates my desire for killing myself from my desire to live and thrive. I want to live. I want to embrace life. I want to live each day. I want to do the things God wants me to do so I can live. And that's not natural to me. I was defeated before I started everything. I just knew I was going to lose. I was a negative thinker. I didn't want to play because I didn't think I could win. And if I can't be the best, I don't want to play. And that came back and bit me in the butt recently. That idea that if I can't be the best, I don't want to play. And I have to work on that every day of my life. Very important. You just go out there and do the best you can, I was told. And I'm trying to do that every single day of my life today. Let's continue. Business and professional men have regained their standing. Another miracle. There is scarcely any form of trouble and misery which has not been overcome among us. Wow. What a promise. Wow. What a program. Wow. What a God. Wow. What a way of life. In one Western city, Akron, Ohio, and its environs, there are 1,000 of us and our families. A little exaggeration there. We meet frequently so that newcomers may find the fellowship they seek. At these informal gatherings, one may often see from 50 to 200 persons. We are growing in numbers and power. Look around you today. Alcoholics Anonymous is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. It's in small towns as well as big cities. I lived in Eugene, Oregon. I have an Oregon Ducks t-shirt on today, and my background is the Oregon Duck because it's 6:30 Pacific time Oregon is going to tip off against Creighton, and I'll be rooting my Ducks on. Go Ducks! But the bottom line is that in Eugene, Oregon, they don't have OA, and they don't have a lot of things, but they have AA, and there's lots and lots of AA meetings there. You ask anybody in any small town if they have AA, you'll probably find out that they do. They may not have OA, they may not have HA or CA or, you know, whatever, but they're going to have AA meetings. Make sure if you go and you're not alcoholic that they are open rather than closed before you go. Page 16, an alcoholic in his cups is an unlovely creature. Our struggles with them are variously strenuous, common, comic, and tragic. One poor chap committed suicide in my home. He could not or would not see our way of life. This is Bill Cousins, Bill C. And Bill C. was an attorney, but he was a notorious gambler. He was a bridge player in New York. He loved to play bridge. And he loved to play bridge for money. And he often lost. And he was also an alcoholic. And Bill Cousins used to sell some of the Wilson's possessions out from under them when he was living in their home. He sold their clothes. He sold suitcases of theirs. He sold a lot of their things at a pawn shop. And then one day when Lois and Bill were out, he killed himself in their home. And it was very, very tragic. Very, very tragic. And that was Bill's cousin, Bill Cousin, not Bill's cousin, Bill Cousins, sorry. Why did I say Bill's cousin? No, it was Bill Cousins. And he was a very early member of their group. He never really did get sober, though, unfortunately. There is, however, a vast amount of fun about it all. I suppose some would be shocked at our seeming worldliness and levity, but just underneath there is deadly earnestness. Faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us, or we perish. That's a warning. Faith has to work in and through us. How does it work in us? By doing the steps, praying, and through us, through sponsorship of others, or we perish. Once again, when the big book wants to tell us something, it doesn't tell it to us once. It tells it to us many, many times because it spirals that information. Very, very important, okay? Most of us feel we need look no further for utopia. We have it with us right here and now. Each day, my friend's simple talk in our kitchen multiplies itself in a widening circle of peace on earth and goodwill to men. Now that's Christmas language. I call that Christmas language. But what is the spirit of Christmas? The spirit of Christmas is giving. The spirit of Christmas is peace and joviality and love. And if we are going to think about Christmas, peace on earth and goodwill to men, we are given to give. We are given to open our hearts and our souls and often our pocketbooks and our time and our spirit to others who are suffering. And if we don't do that, then we have not embodied the spirit, not only of Christmas, but of what this way of life is all about. Okay, Bill Wilson died on January the 24th, 1971, which ironically was his wedding anniversary. Bill and Lois were married on January the 24th, 1917. And he died on his wedding anniversary. So that was when Bill left us. But Bill Wilson will live forever. Bill Wilson will never, ever die. And the sun will never set on the service that he gave this earth. Now I invite you to be Bill Wilson for somebody, because when you give of yourself as a sponsor, and I have a couple of sponsees here today on the line, I have four of you. When you give of yourself to the people in your meetings and in your environment, you can achieve this immortality. Now, you may doubt what I'm saying, but what I'm telling you is true. It says in the Old Testament, save one life and you've saved the world. Now, I'm going to tell you somebody that I owe my life to, somebody that you will never meet, that you don't know. But I owe this man my life, because if it wasn't for this man, I wouldn't be here today. My father was the sole survivor of murder and mayhem in Europe. And he was taught to run. And when he ran toward the sea. And he was taught as a child that if they came to kill the family, if anybody got away, to run. And he ran to a shipyard where they had an ocean liner, Baltic to Baltimore. But he didn't have a ticket. He had blood on him because of what he had just run from for weeks. He had dried blood on his clothing. He was 14 years old. And the ship was making that noise. They were starting up the engines and getting the ship ready to leave port. And my father begged the guy to let him on the ship because he knew he had a sister in America in a place called Chicago. And the guy wouldn't let him on without a ticket. And just before they left, the guy said to my 14-year-old dad, "Go ahead. Go ahead. I owe that man my life. Go ahead." And he let my dad on the ship because there were other passengers that said they would take care of him. You should never see the murder and the mayhem that he witnessed close hand, firsthand. Human beings from 6 weeks old to 70, 75 years old murdered in front of him. The sounds, the smells, the fear. You should never know that. And for what reason? For what reason? The whole thing is insane. And yet, if it wasn't for that man, go ahead, letting him in, and the ship was gone. It left with him on it, and I was born in 1954. I would not be here. I would not be here, nor would you, ostensibly. So you never know, because to the world, you're a person. But to that person, you can be the world, and you can light them up and give them hope. If you work hard enough, you can save lives. And the only thing you have to do is just pass on what you've learned. You don't have to be the perfect sponsor. You don't have to be the perfect anything. You just have to do the best you can to give the person the lantern that you are holding up so that they can walk the path that worked for you. You don't have to have any special skill. You don't have to have any special sort of personality. You can do it with God's help. And you have us to ask. If you run into a problem with a sponsee, you don't know what exactly to do. You don't know exactly how to. You have us, and we'll tell you what we did that worked. You're not on out there by yourself alone. You can do this. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And you can achieve instant immortality in doing this work, which is so close to God's heart. Be one of his instruments. Recover and pass on what you have learned. And we're studying the life of Bill Wilson. Why? Was he such a great guy? Yeah, he was okay. Was he a giant of philosophy? Was he a giant of theology? Was he a giant of spirituality? No. No. What he did in print and in life was to pass on what he has learned. And you can do that. You can do that. All right. We don't have a ton of time left. So I'm just going to start an idea here. And then we're going to actually get into this chapter probably next week. For thousands and thousands of years, alcoholism had no remedy. There were people who sold potions. They call them snake oil salesmen because they were shysters. They were crooks. They were con men who would sell a potion that the alcoholic would drink and it would cure him of his alcoholism. Many of the potions were whiskey. And there was nowhere to go. Solomon, in the Old Testament, in the book of Solomon, wrote about alcoholism. And he believed that it was a disease, it was an illness, but he couldn't prove it, and he had no remedy for it, none. In the 1640s, there was a doctor in England, London, England, and his name was Dr. Trotter. Dr. Trotter believed and wrote a paper to that effect that in the 1640s, he wrote a paper that he believed that alcoholism was an illness, but he couldn't prove it and he had no remedy for it. The very first Surgeon General of the United States, he's a man who signed the Declaration of Independence. His name was Dr. Benjamin Rush. If you ever come to Chicago, you'll see, if you're like a touristy person, you'll see Rush Street, a lot of high-end restaurants and bars and dance places and places you take a date or maybe look for a date, something like that, are on Rush Street. And it's named for Dr. Benjamin Rush. Now, oddly, ironically, because God likes to laugh too, the hospital that Dr. Bob did his residency at was Rush Presbyterian St. Luke's in Chicago, named for Dr. Rush. Well, anyway, in 1790, Dr. Benjamin Rush wrote a paper, and he believed that alcoholism was an illness, but he couldn't prove it, and he had no remedy for it. Notice I didn't say a cure, I said a remedy. John Adams, who was the first vice president of America and the very second president of America, he had a son named Charles. And Charles Adams was an alcoholic, a very bad alcoholic, very bad alcoholic. And Rush treated him for his alcoholism. He died of his, Charles Rush, Charles Adams died of his alcoholism. And Dr. Rush was very sad that he lost his patient. And he wrote a paper in 1790 that he said, well, Charles Adams was still alive in 1790, but he wrote a paper based on his treating Charles that he believed that alcoholism was an illness, But of course, he had no remedy for it. So we see the title of this chapter, there is a solution, and we put the emphasis on is. Now, the brilliance of this title of this chapter is, the brilliance of it is, that there's also another way to look at the title of this chapter. There is a solution. Now, why is that important? You know, I don't always make great choices. What happens in my brain is I don't want to make a choice. Now I'm much better at it. But when I was married for 17 and a half years. And before that, I was equally as nuts, codependent. I didn't want to make a decision because I was scared to make a decision. And I was scared to make a decision because I didn't want to be laughed at and ridiculed. I had already been ridiculed a lot in my life. I didn't want any more ridicule. And I wanted to make the popular decision, and I didn't know how to stand on my own 2 feet. So I would get your decision first, and then I would either agree with you or not agree with you. But more than ever, I wanted to agree with you so you would like me and you wouldn't abandon me. That's what I come from. Now I can make a decision, but I don't want to. So there is a solution means I don't have to make a decision. I have a solution. It is the solution. This is what I do. Now, some of you are going to throw this rock at me and say, well, I like the big book, but I think that this literature or that literature or this method works best for me. God bless you. The big book is the way I choose to recover. I'm not saying that is the only way to recover. It is the only way for me to recover. I don't want to have to make a decision as to column A, column B, column C. You know, sometimes you go to a restaurant and there's 87 million choices there. I usually order what I like. I know what I like. I don't want to sit usually and make decisions. It's too taxing on my little pea brain. So when it comes to recovery, I don't necessarily want to have decisions. I just want to do what's in front of me. There is a solution, very important. There is a solution, very important. Now, this is the first chapter that was written. Before the doctor's opinion, the doctor's opinion wasn't written until December of 38, just 5 months before the book was published. That wasn't completed until December of 38. And Bill's story was originally going to go in the back of the book. So this, there is a solution, was the first chapter written, and it was intended to be the first chapter of the book. But when Dr. Silkworth cooperated and wrote his opinion, they knew that that had to be in the front of the book, because without the doctor's opinion, there's none of this makes any sense. It doesn't make any sense to talk about alcoholism if you don't know what alcoholism is. What is alcoholism? Alcoholism is an abnormal reaction of the brain that we call the mental twist. And in the 12 and 12, it's called the mental obsession. What is an obsession? It is a thought which pushes aside all thought to the contrary. Why do we think about alcohol or food so much? Because it gives us the effect. And it's coupled with a physical allergy. What is that allergy? The craving. The allergy is an adverse, abnormal reaction to the food, beverage, or substance. Abnormal means most people do not react the way I do, and adverse means that it's harmful. I have friends who, when they go out to eat, he and his wife can split a dinner and they're both taking home some of their half. I have friends who, when they go out with their wives or they go out, they can split a hamburger. They can split a sandwich and save it for later. I don't get that because the more I eat, the more I want. The more I want, the more I eat, the more I want, the more I eat, the more I eat, the more I want. And it's just endless. There's no end to it at all. And so for me, it just does not work that way. So the more I eat, the more I want, the more I want, the more I eat. I don't understand that. So it's a twist of the mind in search of the effect. And it is a allergy of the body. So if I can't stop because of the allergy, and I can't stay stopped because the mind is going to be fettered with this idea of getting this effect, I am a compulsive overeater, and the only way out for me is through the 12 steps. So this was the first chapter written. It is not the first chapter in the book because Tom Uzzell, the editor, was brought in and he made Bill's story chapter two. And they left the doctor's opinion to chapter one. And then they moved the doctor's opinion to the Roman numeral section. So next week, we are going to study the beginning parts of this very, very important chapter. What step are we studying when we study the doctor's opinion, Bill's story, and chapter two and three? We're studying step one. We're in step one. This chapter is going to teach me a lot about myself and a lot about how the alcoholic thinks and how the alcoholic drinks. And the value of this chapter is so high that without it, I do not think I could have recovered. But we are in step one. We are in step one. So we're going to study this book. We're going to do the best we can to pull it apart. And for right now, what I would like to do is I'd like to turn this over to Sue L. And Sue, we're going to do Q&A, but what I'd like you guys to do is make a note, July 12th, 13th, and 14th in Phoenix, Arizona, at the Crowne Plaza Hotel. We are having our big book retreat, and we're hoping that you will come. To register, go to oaphoenix.org, oaphoenix.org to register for this retreat. I'm going to turn it over to